In the summer of 2023, Instagram followers of a Bosnian bodybuilder got a notification that he had just begun a live stream. He was a small social media influencer in the fitness community. He went live often to share tips with his followers, but today's live was very different. Instead of answering questions about his gym routine, today he was broadcasting live the torture and eventual murder of his ex-wife, Nazama Hesimovic. She'd recently tried to get a restraining order out against him. She'd called the police frequently, begging them to help her. But she was let down by the authorities of her country. They allowed her to be slaughtered on camera by her ex-husband for over 12,000 people to tune into live. But she wasn't the only murder victim of Nermin Sulemanovic. After killing his ex-wife, he went on a violent murder spree. And this is the story of the life and crimes of a bodybuilding maniac. Quickly, one last thing before we get into the episode. I just want to give my usual disclaimer that I mean absolutely no disrespect to anyone that we talk about in this episode. Everything that I'm about to say is publicly available information that myself and my research team have found online and compiled into one big episode. Today we're going to be covering a lot of especially sensitive topics, including suicide and domestic violence. Domestic abuse is going to be a really big theme of this video. So if any of that sounds too triggering, too intense for you, then please do click out of this episode now. Hopefully I'll get to see you again some other time with a different episode, but please look after yourself. While we make every effort to fact check our sources and make sure that all of our information is correct, no action should be taken in reliance upon the information in this episode. And I want to take this opportunity to remind you all that these are real people's lives that we're talking about. So please keep everything kind and respectful in the comments. I know that you will. I know I don't even need to ask for that. Just a reminder that all opinions stated in this episode are mine and mine alone. And with all that being said, let's get into the case. An Instagram live broadcast with a horrifying twist. So today's case takes place in Bosnia and Herzegovina, more specifically in the northeastern town of Gradecz. Please be patient with my pronunciation in this video. I've tried my best. I've looked everything up a million times, but I have to say, I can't even pronounce my own name on the best of days, so please be patient. And this case was another pretty difficult one for our research team to dig into. It seems that it's only really reported in Bosnian news, so it's quite hard for us to find English documentation of it all, but I think this one is so important to talk about. I really wanted to cover this one, even though I knew it was going to be kind of a hard one for the research team. Sorry to those guys, but like I say, it's going to be really worth it, because this woman was so terribly let down by her government and by the authorities in her country. And I'll be honest, I don't know too much about Bosnia and Herzegovina. I don't know much about what goes on there or what their authorities and their legal system is like. But I want to talk about this. I want to get this onto our side of the internet, because this woman's story is so heartbreaking, and it really worries me, because this is a really recent case, just from last year, and it terrifies me to think that that is still going on over there, and that other women might be in her position and being let down by their authorities right now as we speak. So that's why I felt that this was a very important case for us to cover. But yeah, just in case there are a couple of like gaps or a few questions that you might have, yeah, this one's been a bit hard for us to research, and I think we've done a pretty good job at piecing it all together, so let's go. Like I said, this case was a very recent one. It happened just last summer on August 11th, 2023. That day, a 35-year-old Bosnian bodybuilding social media influencer named Nermin began a live stream on Instagram. So far, so normal. Nermin was a micro-influencer. He had about 10,000 followers, which can be enough to make a little bit of extra money if you can get brand deals. Brand deals can be kind of hard to get when you're about 10,000 followers, but he was managing. He had a few different partnerships with like gymwear brands and protein shake companies. So he was probably making a little bit of extra cash on the side with this side hustle. But his main full-time job was as a fitness coach. I mean, I'm sure you saw that one coming. Nerman lived and breathed fitness and bodybuilding and gym.
He was absolutely wham.
And when I say that, I mean massive, huge, like exactly how you would imagine a bodybuilder.
He was so tanned and veiny, and he even had a bald head that just looked like a third bicep. He looked like he was just all muscle everywhere.
But he was super, super passionate about fitness and bodybuilding and health in general. And he was always posting on Instagram and on Facebook. He followed a bunch of other men just like him, and he would follow them and stalk their pages for hours. It was honestly like his biggest passion was just thinking about and reading about and looking into fitness.
His full name was Nerman Sulemanovich, and like I said, he was 35 years old at the time of this case. He was born in 1988 in Bosnia,
and he had a terribly rough childhood. When he was born, the Bosnian War was already in full swing, and it was in full swing throughout a lot of his early life.
Before the age of 10, Nerman didn't know peace. He was born into and grew up in a war-torn country, not knowing whether he would survive, whether his family would survive, whether everything would be okay. That is such a damaging space for a child to be in during those developmental years.
On top of that, his family were also very, very poor. They struggled to put food on the table. They struggled to keep their house. They struggled to work and look after the kids at the same time. There were a lot of struggles for him growing up.
And it was also around this time that Nerman found himself falling into some bad circles. Other young boys that were starting to take a bad path in life. They were getting into petty crime and drugs, and that very quickly snowballed out of control. There have been allegations and accusations that we haven't been able to confirm, so just keep that in mind, but there have been accusations that Nerman was involved in drug rings, drug gangs, or organized crime, like big operations, big criminal operations.
And that started from when he was a child. And yeah, it's annoying that we can't find the details on it. I don't know how involved he was, and I don't know if he was still involved with anything like that at 35. My personal guess is that he probably wasn't, because he seemed to have his life sorted out, kind of quote unquote.
He had a job, he had a group of friends, he had a house, he had a child, which you'll see soon, which is a devastating element of this case, that there was a child involved that was affected by everything that Nerman went on to do.
But I'm getting a bit ahead of myself there. Basically, Nerman had a terrible childhood and upbringing because of so many different reasons, so many different elements made his life so difficult and scary, and he had to find all of these different ways to feel in control of his life, whether that was joining a criminal gang or becoming a bodybuilder, maybe. Nerman really found solace in fitness and bodybuilding, in giving his mind something else to focus on, something else to work on that made him feel stronger.
Maybe that was a big part of why he really got into bodybuilding, that packing on like physical muscle could help him to feel more in control of the danger and the chaos that surrounded him. Maybe felt like he could hold his own in all of those situations now.
As he got older, Nerman dedicated more and more of his life to fitness. Well, to be fair, as he was getting older, it was less fitness and more so bodybuilding, because those two are quite different things. Fitness is more so about like general health and making sure that your muscles are all being used and, you know, everything's working well, whereas bodybuilding is way more about how you look.
It doesn't matter if you got there in a healthy way, because that's not the aim. The aim is to just be as big and as muscular and as tanned and veiny and bald as you can be.
Not necessarily bald, but Nerman was bald. And like I say, his head looked like a third bicep. I really couldn't get over that.
But yeah, like I say, fitness and bodybuilding are two very, very different things, because the way that Nerman was doing bodybuilding was so unhealthy. There were a lot of allegations of steroids. And again, we couldn't quite confirm this. But we think there could have been steroids involved.
And the allegations are not just normal steroid use. They are like intense steroid use. Loads of different types of steroids, like high dosages. And I was thinking this as we were like looking through this case. He is mixing all these different steroids. You don't know what that's going to do to your body. Like, even I try not to mix too many alcohols on a night out, because
I'm scared of what it'll do.
Like, I don't know where he was getting the steroids from, and I don't know how many different types he was on, if any. But I feel like that's quite a dangerous thing in general, is to just mix a lot of different substances in your body all at once.
And if these allegations are true, then it was probably on a daily basis that he was mixing all these different chemicals inside him, which is just another scary element to this.
But I think he felt like he needed those steroids because he would get so much praise for this really unnatural body that he had built for himself. He would enter bodybuilding contests and win them. He was gaining loads of followers on social media of, like, other young men flocking to him that admire him and want a body just like him, and they're willing to listen to every tip and trick that he has because they want Nerman's body.
And I think Nerman really liked this power and control, this popularity that his body and his social media profiles would bring him.
Nerman felt like a god at this point in his life. He had the physique that so many other men were admiring and aspiring towards. And this newfound micro fame was going to his head at rapid speed.
Of course, his followers only ever saw his best side, which is quite typical for social media influencers. They only ever saw Nerman's, like, super tanned, like, tensed up gym pics. Oh my god. Oh my god. Okay, girl.
They only ever saw him, you know, flexing and posing, but they never saw the darker parts of his life just in general.
Like the fact that Nerman Sulemanovic, their favorite influencer, was a dangerous, violent abuser.
He had intense anger issues that he had never learned how to control, and he had, allegedly, a lengthy criminal history. But of course, none of his social media followers knew anything about any of that. They literally just took this man for face value. He was a bodybuilder and that's all they cared about.
We did struggle to find out about Nerman's, like, criminal history and his past in general. I'm sure you've figured that out by now with me throwing out, like, allegedly's left, right, and center.
But a lot of his past is steeped in rumors and mystery. We do know for sure that he has had a lot of altercations, violent altercations. He has been done for assault a lot of times, and I don't know who that was against. At least one of them was against a police officer. So this is just a generally quite violent and aggressive man.
But I think a lot of the anger and aggression that Nerman was experiencing in his life was because of his bodybuilding, or more specifically because of his alleged steroid use.
I'm not sure if there ever has been any proof that he was a roid head, but YouTube viewers especially that have seen the pictures of this man, you think so too, right?
He just has that look,
that unnatural, very tight skin with bulging veins, and, like, I don't know. There's some very muscular people that look very naturally muscular, and there's some where they look like they're about to, like, shrivel up and explode at the same time. And I don't know how that's possible, but he looks like that. He really looks like that.
But my point in bringing up all of this, like, heavy steroid usage, alleged heavy steroid usage, is because it could well have caused something called roid rage, which you might have heard before. This is a very big phenomenon when it comes to people taking steroids and experiencing excessive anger and aggressive outbursts. It's a very irrational kind of anger that is not very easy to dispel. It comes on very quick and sometimes, like, practically out of nowhere.
These people that take a lot of steroids and have roid rage, they are very easily triggered. And like I say, sometimes it is practically out of nowhere. Sometimes they're triggered just from nothing.
So the chemicals that he allegedly took to alter his body and pack on the muscles, they didn't just affect his muscles, they affected his brain too. He became very emotionally unstable, and he was actually dangerous to the people around him.
At the time of this case, Nerman was actively stalking his ex-wife, Nizama, and she was trying absolutely everything that she could to get away from him.
Nizama Hesimovic was 37 years old at the time of this case. She worked as a nurse, and her baby daughter was her whole entire world.
That's right, Nizama and Nerman had a child together.
Mm-hmm.
They had a daughter that I think was a couple of years old in 2023. That was another thing that we struggled to kind of determine concretely about this case, is when the baby was born and how old she was at the time of this case. I think she was a toddler. We can safely say that she was a toddler at the time of this case. And at this point, so the two of them, Nizama and Nermin, had separated. We'll get more into the details of that in a second. But Nizama was really worried, not only for herself, but also for her baby. Because Nermin could not accept that she was leaving him. And he was still following her everywhere and trying to get in contact with her and trying to see the baby. And Nizama was worried, like really scared. I'm not sure how long the two of them had been married before this, but it was Nizama that initiated the divorce. It was her that left Nermin because he was so violent and aggressive and angry. He was very, very abusive towards her, and she'd put up with it for a good few years in that marriage. But the final straw that made her leave him once and for all was the fact that their baby daughter was getting caught in the crossfire of this really dangerous, violent relationship now. He had abused Nizama, his wife, for years, and she realized that if he could do all of that to her, the woman that he said he loved, the woman that he gave a ring and said vows to and promised to love and cherish until death do us part or whatever, I don't know, I'm not married, but if he can abuse her like that, then what's stopping him from abusing their child like that? He would psychologically abuse Nizama, physically abuse her. He would beat her up often. And again, she was just so, so worried that this behavior could be taken out on her daughter too. And so when Nizama finally built up the courage to leave her rotten husband, he didn't like that, not one bit. He'd had complete control over Nizama for at least a few years. And this was her first act of defiance, almost. And it made him so angry and actually quite panicked that the one person that he had full control over, the one person that he always used to take out his anger on, basically his punching bag, was now growing legs and walking away from him. He couldn't have that control over her anymore. He had made Nizama's life a misery for the years that they were together. And even now, even when she built up the courage to leave him, he kept making her life a living hell. He followed her everywhere she went. He kept trying to get in contact with her, kept contacting her friends and her family, finding ways to stay in her life and keep her scared of him. And I don't think it's like he was trying to get her back either. I really don't think this was a case of him, like, I don't know, running after her until she agreed not to leave him. Genuinely, I think he was just trying to scare her and intimidate her. You'll see as we get further and further into this case that Nermin Sulemanovic loved to have power over people. That was one of the things that made him feel all right in life, was if he had control over the people around him. And I guess maybe there's a connection between this kind of psychology and his excessive bodybuilding. He's trying to keep control of everyone in his life. So maybe if he looks physically intimidating and dangerous and scary, then people will just bow to his every demand, you know? Over their years of marriage, Nizama had filed several police reports against her violent husband. And even after the split, she still had to contact the police because, like I say, he never left her alone. It was incessant. This stalking, this intimidation was never ending. It was almost every single day. And Nizama was scared for her life at this point because he didn't seem to be calming down. Even after weeks and months were going by, he was still just as angry as the day that she left him. My point being that the police in their area, in Gradačets, they knew what Nizama's situation was like. They knew that she was scared for her life. They knew that Nermin was violent and dangerous and aggressive and was stalking her, following her, trying to control and abuse her. They knew. The police knew full well. They had multiple reports of this, but they were doing nothing to protect Nizama or her daughter. They just kind of, well, they didn't do anything. They didn't do anything. Nizama had even tried to file a restraining order against Nermin, but you're not going to believe this, it was actually rejected. How on earth would the courts see all of this evidence, all of these different police reports, and see Nizama standing there crying, begging them to help her, and they still reject that case. I honestly cannot believe that.
Especially considering that Nizama got the divorce on the grounds of his violent behaviour. Like, there is, it's all documented, which is why I find it so hard to believe that the courts could look at this woman and say,
go away.
It's just so haunting and so devastating that Nizama could see where this was going.
She knew just how violent and dangerous her ex-husband was, and she could tell that he wanted her dead. And she knew it was going to end up at that point. If she didn't get some help, she was begging for that help and not receiving it.
Just 5 days before this case, Nizama's grandmother saw her for what would be the very last time. And she said that her granddaughter looked anxious, tired, very thin. She was just very scared. She wasn't herself at all.
Nizama told her grandmother that she hadn't been sleeping or eating properly lately because of the baby, because the baby was waking up all the time. But her grandmother knew that there was definitely something more to it, something that Nizama wasn't telling her, whether that was because she didn't want to worry her grandmother or whether she just didn't want to get into it. But her grandmother knew that it wasn't just the baby.
A day after that, after she last saw her grandmother, that was when Nizama's restraining order was rejected. And 4 days after that, Nizama would be brutally murdered by the man that she had been trying to get away from.
The fateful day was August 11th, 2023. Nerman's followers got a notification to say that he had begun a live stream on Instagram. But as they all started to tune in, expecting to see their usual Q&A kind of thing, they very quickly realised that this was not their usual content.
Nerman wasn't on screen. Normally, when he started a live stream, it'd be right onto his face and it'd all be like, oh, hi guys, you know, as you would expect a live stream. But Nerman wasn't on camera this time. And the energy of this live stream, I mean, viewers couldn't quite make out what the camera was pointing at for a little while, but the energy of the live stream was very intense. It was off. Like, viewers could tell that something was wrong.
And quickly, the live stream took a very dark and disturbing turn. Nerman points the camera at a woman who is sat on a bench on the back porch of a house. Viewers are horrified to see that this woman is absolutely covered in blood. Her face is all swollen. In fact, so swollen that her mouth is open this whole entire time. She can't close her own mouth. She'd clearly been terribly, terribly beaten. And as she sat there on the bench, viewers could see her kind of falling in and out of consciousness. She was very dazed. She wasn't all there. She was borderline unresponsive. She was almost passing out. This woman looked like she was actively dying in front of everyone. And what was even more disturbing was when the camera panned a little bit further and you could see the ground underneath where this woman was sitting, there was a pool of blood. A pool of her own blood. She had been sat there bleeding for quite some time. And I'm sure you've already gathered at this point that this poor beaten woman was Nizama Hesimovic, his ex-wife. But none of the viewers of this live stream knew that at this point in time. They had no idea who this woman was. Nerman, I don't think, ever really posted his family, so it's not like they recognized her as soon as the camera went on her. Everyone was so incredibly confused, but so incredibly disturbed. No one had any idea what was going on, but everyone could immediately sense that it was horrific, whatever was happening. It was an absolutely horrifying scene to be broadcasted live onto the internet, but very quickly it started to build a lot of traction. Soon enough, 12,000 people were in that Instagram live broadcast watching this real life horror story unfold in real time. Like I said, of course, the audience have no idea what is going on in this broadcast, but it is very obvious that just before the camera was picked up, just before this live broadcast began, something awful had happened in that household. Something terrible had happened to that poor woman, and it seemed like it was at the hands of Nerman because he didn't seem to mind. He was the one holding the phone, pointing it at this woman. If he was worried, if he was panicked, he would be calling the police, not on an Instagram live. So there was a very, very sinister energy. There were a lot of people that clicked on this broadcast for the first time, saw this harrowing scene and clicked off straight away. Like, it is traumatizing. A lot of people wouldn't want to see that. But there were quite a lot of people that couldn't click away. Kind of like how people describe watching a car crash. Like, you don't want to see it, but you almost don't have a choice. It's like your brain and your body decide that for you, that you are going to watch this car crash. It's probably some sort of evolutionary instinct when you think about it. Like, we sense danger and we feel the urge to, like, stay aware of what's going on at all times. If we can see the source of the danger and we can monitor it and keep tabs on it, then maybe it helps us to feel a bit more safe. And, like, I know that this was all going on people's phones. It wasn't in their immediate reality. But our animalistic brains haven't developed anywhere near as fast as our technology has. We're not adapted to understand it on like a brain level. Yeah. The sight of blood still kicks us into subconscious hypervigilance, even if it is just on a phone screen. Like, your animalistic brain can't quite tell the difference that the threat isn't immediately in front of you because, well, I mean, it is. It's just on a little rectangle. So, these 12,000 people that have logged into this live stream are watching on in horror as the camera lingered on this woman for a moment, on Nizama. She's not doing or saying anything. I mean, she can't. She is so beaten and swollen. But then, a child starts to cry in the background of this live stream. Of course, we know that that will have been his daughter. Their daughter, Nizama and Nerman's child that they had together, is laying witness to this horrifying scene. This little girl is seeing her mother like this. Who knows, she might have even watched her father beating her mother, beating her into this state as well, where she can hardly even hold herself up, she can hardly even open her eyes. Did Nerman's followers even know that he had a child? I mean, maybe not. But the addition of this crying child in the background of the live stream made everything so much more horrifying. And then Nerman makes it known to this live stream broadcast exactly why he is doing this to his ex-wife. And it's seemingly out of revenge. Not revenge for her leaving him, not revenge for her wanting a divorce, but revenge because she had contacted the police on him. And this is one thing about Nerman. He is one of those men that hates the police. Fuck the feds, you know, that kind of thing. He must have had, as we were talking about his like elusive, mysterious criminal past earlier, this makes me think that there's a lot of truth in that criminal past because, yeah, he has a disdain for the police. He hates them. They're like his number one op. His biggest enemy is the police force. And the fact that his ex-wife had reported him to the police, to his worst enemies, that made him even more angry than anything else she had done, than her divorcing him in general. So he points the camera right at Nizama and demands that she tell him why she involved the police just a few days ago. And she struggles out a response. She can barely talk. Her face is so swollen. And she just tells Nerman that she feared for their lives, for her life, for her daughter's life. And I don't know what he expected her to say, because obviously that was the reason she involved the police. He knew that was the reason she involved the police. Anyone could guess that that was the reason. But I don't think he was asking that question because he wanted a genuine answer. I think he already knew the answer, but he more so just wanted to make it known to the broadcast why he was so angry with Nizama. It was a rhetorical question. He wasn't actually looking for a genuine answer. He was more so saying it so that the Instagram live audience knew that she had called the police on him and he wasn't happy. And it seems that's why he was doing all of this. That's why he had beaten her within an inch of her life and then broadcasted it to thousands of people across the whole entire world. He wanted to hurt his ex-wife, maybe even murder her, and he wanted the whole world to watch it happen. Nerman then points the camera at a table that has a pistol laying on it, and as he picked it up, he addressed the audience on the live stream saying, "Hey guys, you're going to see something you've never seen before. A live murder. It's a massacre." And with that, he raised the gun, barely giving anyone time to digest what he had just said. One singular shot ran out. He had shot Nizama in the head at point-blank range. 12,000 people saw this murder happen live, and they watched as Nazama's body tensed up into the fencing position, and viewers heard her make, quote, terrible sounds as the life left her body. By now, the child's screaming was even louder after what she had just witnessed. She had just watched her father shoot her mother in the head. And she had also heard those sounds. She had seen her mother die. And Nerman actually pans around the camera and points it to his toddler, his little girl, who's about 2 or 3 years old, who is now collapsed on the ground, wailing in anguish. She has just watched him murder her mother. The one woman that was there to love her and protect her, her father didn't treat her like that. And she had just watched him get rid of her whole entire life, her whole entire universe. When you're 2, 3 years old, your mum is everything to you. And maybe at 2, 3 years old, you don't understand what a gun is, and maybe she didn't understand everything that was going on here, but children understand what death is. And it's a very intuitive thing to see someone tense up into that position, to make those noises, and then to go completely still. She might not have understood what a gunshot was or what had just happened to her mum, but she was very aware that her mum was gone now. And I just think it's so insanely vile that Nerman then turned around and pointed the camera at this poor child, just so that the audience could, what, see her reaction to what he had just done as well? How sick and twisted. What a fucking horrible thing for that child to witness. It breaks my heart so much. Every single part of this case is so, so harrowing. This woman had been begging for help from police, from authorities, for years to save her from this violent, dangerous man. But she had been ignored and now brutally murdered by the very man that she knew was capable of something like this. And she wasn't just murdered, she was humiliated, she was tortured, broadcasted live for thousands of people to watch her die. And it just tops it all off that he made their 2-year-old daughter watch all of this happen in person, and then showed the fucking audience her reaction to her mother's murder. This is honestly one of the most sick cases I've ever come across. And you guys know I've been doing this job for a long ass time. There are hundreds of videos on this channel. Yet this is one of the worst that has like kept me up at night. I've thought about this little girl quite a lot this week, and I really hope she's doing well. I mean, I'm going to give you a full update at the end of the case on where she is and how she's doing, but holy fuck. I hope you guys are doing all right, the audience at home, because this is fucking heavy, isn't it? And it doesn't even stop there. It's actually going to get a little bit worse, and then we're finally done talking about this live stream. After Nerman had panned the camera and shown their baby daughter's reaction, he then says the coldest and most devastating sentence I've heard in a long, long time. He says, "Here, someone come and save the child." Moving on. With that, the broadcast ends, and Nerman leaves the house, leaving his 2-year-old daughter stranded, locked in that house with the dead body, the fresh dead body of her mother. I'm not sure how long it took for the daughter to be, you know, found and rescued, and she was, don't worry. I think it all happened quite quickly. I think the scene of the crime was taped up quite quickly because, bear in mind, this had been broadcasted on Instagram. But in that short period of time that little girl was left with the dead body of her mother, we don't know what she was doing, but it just breaks my heart so much to think about what was going through her mind or what she was doing. There were some reports that she had even crawled through the blood, which, oh my God, like it makes, oh my God. This is quite a unique element of a case. We don't see this all that often, where there is like a child abandoned with a murder victim's dead body. It's making me feel sick to my stomach. We're gonna have to move on. I've got tears in my eyes. I've got a tummy ache. The daughter was eventually recovered by a man named Amir, who was a friend of Nerman's. In fact, he was actually the owner of the gym that Nerman worked at. So does that make him Nerman's boss? his boss went and found the murder scene and rescued his daughter.
We don't know what exactly had led him to the house, whether he'd seen the live stream or not, or maybe he'd received some texts from people that had seen the live stream, I don't know. Because actually, a heartbreaking element of this case is that a lot of Nizama's loved ones, and just a lot of people that knew them in general, did see parts of that live stream.
Because, I mean, of course, the word spread very, very fast. As soon as this live stream began and people noticed that something was drastically wrong, people started texting around. People started talking about this.
Even Nizama's own grandmother, you know, the one that we were talking about earlier that was already so, so worried for her granddaughter, even she caught a glimpse of someone's phone with her granddaughter covered in blood on it. And everyone was trying to hide their phones from her grandmother, but this is what I mean. So many people saw it. So many members of the family, so many friends, so many people that loved Nizama watched her murder live on Instagram.
And that was the extent of the horror that was inflicted at the house. But Nerman wasn't finished yet. In fact, he was only just beginning. Nizama wasn't his only murder victim that day.
After murdering his ex-wife in their home on the edge of Gradačac, he then jumps into his BMW.
Because he had a BMW. Sometimes I forget that he was actually like an influencer on the side and like a PT or whatever, personal trainer. Like, he was minted. He was traveling around between murders in style. So he jumped in his BMW and drove about 20-30 minutes to the center of town, hungry for more targets that he could take out this violent anger on.
Whilst pacing the streets of Gradačac, Nerman actually murdered two more people.
He shot and killed two completely randomly chosen, completely innocent men.
It was actually a father and son that he murdered, later identified as Cengiz and Denis Onder. They were 55 years old and 23 years old, respectively. They had just gone out together for the day, and now none of their families were ever going to see them ever again. They were just so suddenly, randomly, viciously murdered in the street by this bodybuilding maniac.
And can you believe, Nerman still wasn't done there. That day, he was going after anyone and everyone. He was shooting, he was assaulting, he was doing fucking everything. Those three were the only murder victims he had that day, but he tried to have a good few more. There were a few attempted murders. He shot at a load of people in the street, one of which was a police officer that he successfully shot, but they survived. He really was trying to massacre the whole town. He was trying to make a spectacle of this whole thing.
It seemed he loved the idea of the attention and the infamy. I mean, I think it speaks for itself, actually, the fact that he live broadcasted the murders on Instagram. And actually, that wasn't the only live stream he did that day. He went on live stream for a second time after committing the other two murders to, like, give his followers an update.
At this point, he didn't, like, consciously know that the police were pursuing him. He must have had an idea, though. Like, when you're live streaming on Instagram in between committing crimes, you're just kind of, like, walking the streets, shooting at people. You've got to expect that the police are on their way.
But, like, at this point, either Nerman didn't care or he just, like, wasn't thinking about that. And he goes on Instagram Live for a second time. And obviously that's gonna help the police locate him as well. They're getting, like, real-time feedback on his surroundings, so it's only gonna help them get to him quicker.
But at this point, I don't think Nerman was even trying to avoid capture. Like I said, he was just trying to make this grand spectacle of everything.
I think it was more about showing the world and the police as well, his biggest enemies, how dangerous and powerful and ruthless he is. He doesn't care that he's gonna get caught at the end of all of this. It's more about the statement that he is making.
And in this second live stream, Nerman sounds even more deranged than he did in the first one.
The way that he updates his followers on his second round of murders was by saying, "I killed two more enemies, a father and his son."
Now, this bit is especially fascinating to me. The use of the word enemies, when police believed that he didn't know those other two victims, he didn't know the father and son prior to killing them, but enemies is just so, like, venomous and specific. It shows like a personal gripe with those people. But we don't think he had one. It's very interesting.
It has been speculated that maybe this father and son could have been involved in Nerman's, like, past criminal circles.
If we are to believe the allegations of, like, drug rings and organised crime, then it might make sense that he does have some enemies out there on the streets of Gradačac.
So maybe he did know these two men before he killed them. Maybe it was more intentional than police think it was.
Or maybe, Nerman was delusional. I don't know. None of these theories have been proven. I do just want to say, like, police still believe that Nerman had no idea who that father and son were, and his use of the word enemies is just, I don't know, that's just a word that he used. Police don't believe there to be anything to it.
And maybe there wasn't, but then this is what makes me think that Nerman could have just been, like, mental. Like, actually mental. I mean, you have to be a level of mentally disturbed to commit these kind of murders and plaster them all over Instagram and film a crying child whose mother you have just murdered. That is fucking sick and twisted. Of course this man had mental issues.
So, that's a theory that maybe he just thought that the father and son were enemies of his. And like, maybe they weren't, maybe he had nothing to do with them at all, but maybe he was just mental and delusional, and he thought something that wasn't real.
But anyway, after that little section, I've only told you one quote of this live, and I got completely sidetracked. So, after he tells the audience that he's killed two more enemies, he then says, "The baby is safe. I'm not a kid for someone to play with. I'm not a kid. She hid the child from me and reported me to the police. Maybe I skipped someone, but it's too late now. Now I have 10,000 followers. I'm popular."
You have to bear in mind that that quote was a lot more, like, disjointed and jumbled, and, like, he wasn't very coherent on this live stream. But the part of that quote that I just read that really stuck out to me was, "Thought I skipped someone, but it's too late now."
What does he mean by that? That he was meant to kill someone else and he skipped someone, but it's too late now? He doesn't think he has time to kill that other person?
And if there is truth to that, that he was planning to kill someone else but didn't have time, then it makes me think that there is truth to those two men being his enemies, quote-unquote enemies.
The way that Nerman is talking about this second leg of his murder spree, it seems very intentional. He's calling people enemies and saying, "Oh, I thought I skipped someone."
It makes this killing spree seem quite thought out. But then again, circling back to my theory that he was just delusional, he was just crazy, then, you know, that could explain a lot of the ramblings on his live streams.
But one thing that is very clear throughout all of this is that Nerman loved the attention that this was bringing him. He was now popular, as he said himself. He had 10,000 followers. That was how he ended his second live stream.
I assume his follower count had been going up and up and up throughout that day as people had been, like, finding out about this story and trying to follow it live.
And it actually sickens me to say that a lot of these followers, I think a lot of his new followers, were actively encouraging his dangerous, violent, aggressive, murderous behavior in these live streams. People were commenting, especially on the first live stream when he was videoing Nizama.
People were encouraging him, saying, like, "Yeah, shoot her, kill her, she deserves it," all this horrific stuff.
The internet can be a very scary, very sick and twisted place at times. Well, especially in certain corners of the internet. And Nerman's Instagram page had become one of those corners. It had now become a hub for these awful, evil people to all gather together and an echo chamber his behavior.
But there was one bombshell that Nerman dropped in that second live stream. Just before he logged off for the final time, he told his followers, "These are not my first murders. I don't talk much." Not his first murders. The three murders that he had just documented pretty much live were not his only kills.
He is implying that he has committed murders before that day and he has just been getting away with them for however long. Police weren't onto him, and, well, what if he is telling the truth?
I'm so torn when it comes to what I think of Nerman Sulejmanovic, and especially, like, his ramblings. I don't know whether I think he is just, like, delusional and a bit mentally unwell, and maybe he doesn't know what he's saying properly.
But there's another part of me that thinks that very mysterious criminal history that even we couldn't dig into, even us, even my research team that I think is the best research team in the whole entire world, even we couldn't find out shit on his criminal past. So that makes me think that it possibly is there, but he was never caught for things. My own personal theory is that he was probably very much involved in stuff.
And so maybe he is telling the truth about having committed murders earlier on in his life, but has just never been caught for them.
I don't know what I believe. I don't know whether I think it's delusion or whether I think he is actually being truthful and he's just confessing for the first time.
Police never ended up pinning any other murders on Nermin Sulemanovic, just these three that we've talked about today. But I don't know. I'm still not fully convinced because, like, were the police even looking in the right places? Like, what if they just missed something? Because also, especially because of how the police in that area were with Nizama when she had an issue, I just don't think I trust the police in Gradačac at all, you know?
They don't sound like a very good police force with the way that they handled this case, so I can't imagine they handled anything else very well.
Any previous crimes that Nermin might have committed, maybe they didn't care about those either.
Well, anyway, that was the end of his second Instagram live stream. A cliffhanger ending, that's for sure.
He just dropped the fact that he might well be a serial killer, and then that is the last time he ever speaks to his online social media following ever again.
Because once he'd ended that second live stream, Nermin lifted the very same pistol that he had used to commit three murders that day. He lifted it to his own head now and shot himself to death.
Perhaps he had finally realized the gravity of the crimes that he had committed throughout that day, and maybe it started to panic him. Maybe he realized that police had to be on their way. They had to be closing in on him. And maybe he felt like this was his only option.
As we've been saying, Nermin famously hated the police. So a lot of people think that him taking his own life here was him taking himself out before the police could get to him.
He didn't want to give them the satisfaction of capturing him. Maybe in his head, if he killed himself first, then that was still him winning.
And there's a part of me that wonders that maybe this had been Nermin's plan all along. Maybe he knew that before he even started that first Instagram live showing Nizama on the bench, maybe he already had it in his head that he was gonna take his own life by the end of that day. Because once you start broadcasting your fucking murders live on Instagram, like, yeah, you're gonna get caught for that. Definitely.
So maybe he was doing all of this stuff all day, like broadcasting and shooting at anyone he wanted in the street because he knew that that was his last day on earth. He knew that he was gonna die before the police got to him, so he was just doing whatever the hell he wanted up until that point.
But now that he had taken his own life, mass murderer Nermin Sulemanovic couldn't hurt anyone else now.
His reign of terror was over, but now justice could never be properly served because he was gone.
And just because he wasn't alive anymore, just because he wasn't a danger to anyone else anymore, that doesn't bring back the three people that he savagely murdered.
There were so many people that were affected by Nermin's actions that day. There were so many victims. And I just keep going back to that little girl. It breaks my heart. I can feel the tears coming into my eyes again. I'm gonna have to stop talking about that. I'm sorry.
There were people that lost their lives. There were people that almost lost their lives. Remember, he committed a lot of attempted murders, shot so many people. So many people had to be hospitalized and had to take time off of work and had to go through therapy after Nermin's actions on this one day last summer.
He ruined and took so many lives.
There were so many people left grieving without their loved ones. And like I said, there was a little girl that had to grow up without her mother. And now, one day, with the knowledge that her father was an evil murderer that killed her mother in front of her. Oh my God, I hope that live stream was like burned. I hope there's no evidence of that online, because if she was to ever come across that online, it really fucking breaks my heart. Like, I really, really hope she doesn't remember that. At 2-3 years old, you would hope that her brain would, like, block it out and she wouldn't remember that as an adult.
But even if she doesn't consciously remember what she saw that day,
the human body takes scar, and she's going to have a lot of subconscious trauma from that day when she was barely even a toddler.
It's just so fucking heartbreaking to me. No child should ever have to witness anything like that.
And the last thing that Nazama Hesimovic ever posted on social media before her brutal murder was actually a photo of her daughter's little foot, her tiny little foot, and the caption read, "A baby will make love stronger, days shorter, nights longer, money less, home happier, clothes more shabby, the past forgotten and a future worth living for."
And that just makes me want to cry so bad, a future worth living for.
But she had left that horrible, evil husband of hers that was abusing her within an inch of her life for years, and she finally thought she had gotten out of there and that she had rescued herself and her baby daughter, and now they could have a life together, away from that man, that awful man. And yet this still happened.
I am going to pull myself together now, because there's other things that we have to wrap up about this case.
So of course, we said earlier that Nerman's boss, or someone from his work, the guy that owned the gym, a guy called Amir, was the one to come and recover his daughter from the crime scene, the one to rescue her. And once this part of the news story hit the internet, I don't know how the internet found out about this, or found out who rescued the girl, but when they did find out, they actually turned on him. Some of those same evil, sick, twisted people that had been encouraging Nerman to commit further and further acts of violence, they had now turned on Amir, giving him grief and threatening him for saving a two-year-old baby. What the fuck is wrong with these people?
Amir was actually receiving threats and just horrible, horrible messages from people. He actually got one saying, "As of tonight, the hunt for you is on, just so you know."
Thankfully, no one ever acted on those threats. Amir was perfectly fine. The daughter was and is perfectly fine. She is still alive. She's reportedly being raised in the sole care of Nizama's sister, which is sweet. I mean, that's about as happy of an ending as I guess she could get. And as I say, I really hope she doesn't grow up to remember anything that she saw that day.
But as for the wider reaction towards this case, the public reaction in Bosnia was huge.
Not only because of the super unique and horrifying circumstances of this case, like a murder on Instagram Live, but also the biggest conversation around this case was actually that Nazama had been trying to get help for years. She had reported Nerman to the police so many times and they had ignored her. They had done fuck all to help this woman who was telling them, "I think he is going to kill me. I think he's going to come after me and my daughter." And they didn't care. The authorities didn't care. The police didn't care. The courts didn't care. I cannot believe they rejected her restraining order just a week before he then went on to murder her.
The way that Nazama had been dealt with in the years before her murder just made everyone so, so angry. She had been let down by the law, by the police, by everyone that had a hand in enabling Nerman's actions that day.
And there was already a lot of criticism in Bosnia at the time about how they enforce their domestic violence laws, or rather the lack of how they enforce their domestic violence laws, because clearly, as you've seen in the case of Nazama, they don't fucking do anything.
Nazama had done everything right. She had tried to save her own life. She had tried so many times. She had kept reaching out to those that she thought could help her in her times of need. She kept updating them on different things that Nerman was doing, but they didn't care.
The government had actively kept this woman in danger until the day that she was murdered.
You know what? I hope all of the people that rejected, that had a hand in rejecting that restraining order, I hope they've heard about this case and I hope they've had a long fucking hard look in the mirror.
Nazama's death was absolutely an avoidable tragedy. It didn't have to happen. But as you're probably aware, if you're an avid true crime watcher, time and time again, victims of domestic abuse, domestic violence, are ignored
until it's too late.
We actually did a video not too long ago about a man named Tom Cressman who was murdered by his girlfriend, who was the stylist for the royal family here in the UK. She murdered him after one particularly violent argument that they'd had at home. But earlier in that day, before she killed him, Tom had been calling the police, telling them that they needed to come and help because this was going to end badly. He knew that she was going to get violent and that he could die. No officers ever came out to speak with him. He didn't even get a call back that night to check that he was okay. And that same night, his girlfriend murdered him. Literally the night before his body was found, he rang one of his friends complaining about how the police weren't taking him seriously, and he said the words, "They only care when there's a body bag." And it is so heartbreaking that such is proven to be true time and time again. It's so disappointing when police and law officials never seem to learn from these kind of cases, do they? In just England and Wales alone, there are two women every week that are murdered by their current or previous partner. Per week, two women a week. And I really wish I could end this case on a slightly happier note, but this is the harsh reality. And as I was saying in the beginning of this video, that is why I wanted to cover this case so badly. It is so important to talk about, especially when it's happening in different countries, places where, admittedly, I don't quite understand the legal proceedings and how the police work. I think it's so important for us to be telling stories like this from everywhere, to open up this conversation for women all over the world, not just women in the UK or in America or Australia, women everywhere. If you have any other cases that are similar to this that you want to see us cover, then please do put them down in the comments. We're always checking the comments and we're always taking case requests from there as well. We do have a case request form that's linked down below in the description. But yeah, we are always checking the comments as well. So please do let me know if there's anything similar to this that you think would be very important to talk about. Maybe cases that haven't been spoken about on YouTube all that much. I would love to give other stories a bit of a platform and to open up those conversations. But yeah, thank you so much for watching this video, and I do apologise that this is a very sad ending to a case. This has just been a really effing harrowing case. Thank you so much for listening to Usual Disclaimer. At this point, I just want to say that if you've been affected by any of the topics we discussed today, please check the description where we've left some helpful resources. If you want to hear more cases like this one, make sure to follow Usual Disclaimer on your podcast app so that you get notifications when we post new episodes. And if you really enjoyed, I'd love it if you could leave a rating and a review too. Usual Disclaimer with Ellen O'Neill is an Audio Boom Studios production. See you next time.